You were talking about what it was like to work in a pediatrics ward.
I said when you would, those little ones look up at you with the big hollow eyes and say, nurse, I know I'm going to die, but do you think first maybe that, you know, that I would see Santa Claus, all the Easter Bunny, all the what have you? Oh, then my birthday is thus and so month. That's when the nurse become mom. You know, it was just a matter that after an amount of time, well, they said I was the best when it come to the pediatric nursing. But the part of it was, as I said, I couldn't leave the uniform. When I went home at night, I couldn't pull off the picture with the uniform. And for that reason, after an amount of time, I just had to transfer from. But I enjoyed the, generally speaking, the older people better because they appreciate. They were so much more appreciative of what was done than the, I would say, the general run of. Younger people expecting so much, but I really enjoyed my time working as a nurse because, as I said, I just felt like that I was really giving to others what it took a special person to give day after day, because it's hard to separate the two words. A person, or just a name, or just a chart. It was hard to separate that from the little ones there, knowing that, you know, that the days were numbered, and nothing you could do about it. And that makes you feel very helpless. Oh, it would me, you know. But. It's been good, and I enjoyed the time that I worked. But in the meantime, I am enjoying the time that I don't have to, you know, work by the time clock. Mm-hmm. I still, because now, like I've had people in my family, my sister, as a matter of fact, just had one thing after another. And I used to go and do her therapy when she had lost her fingers, and I stayed with her a lot, in and out with her. Mm-hmm. And when she had cancer, and I still stay pretty busy, but it's just not the kind. It's. I would say I'm not in a productive job. Mm-hmm. Haven't been in a productive. Because I didn't go back part-time, which I was offered to. But just having some time of my own to do some things for myself, that I don't have to get up at a certain time or go to bed at a certain time. Never could make any plans, you know, as to what I was going to do. It didn't make any difference what somebody else's plans were. I knew what mine would consist of, was ever what was wrote up on that sheet, you know. And be assigned off, knowing without the shadow of a doubt, scared to answer the phone because you knew somebody was going to call for you to come in, you know, on that day. Mm-hmm. So when I laid down the nursing, except as to do something personal,
right?
That was just for that reason,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Did nursing have a, I'm not sure how to say it, like a, was it mostly, I don't know, kind of a technical?
It is.
Thing to you?
It's very, because, as I told this, individual, when they said it was not that much, and that a teacher was the most important, person in a child's life was his teacher. I said, oh no, wait a minute. You're wrong, you got the cart before the horse. I said, the teacher is not near so important. He's not the most important person in that child's life. Because if the child don't make it from the delivery room, he won't need a teacher. Mm. He's first got to clear the delivery room.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And yeah. all of the things between the time that he's born, or she, from the time that he's born until the time that he will be in school. Yes, the teacher is very important. School days will come.
Right.
But
right.
To me, the teacher would start later in life.
Mm-hmm.
The nurse had to get him. The nurse had to get him at least to the nursery mm-hmm. to begin with, mm-hmm. Which was... In some instances, you hold your breath.
You did deliveries.
I worked in the delivery. Yeah, I worked in the delivery room. You know, now I didn't deliver the baby as such.
No, I understand.
You know, but yeah.
I bet you saw things there.
Huh?
I bet you saw things there.
Oh yeah, yeah. And this is when you look at the miracles of God. For instance. This little one is born, and is such a freak. Not meaning this as the word as ugly, but just absolutely scary to look at. Not even human. More like an animal. And it takes nothing on their very own.
Mm.
They start breathing
mm.
on their own, and then here comes. The baby then that looked like the very picture of health, not a blemish from head to toe, as perfect as a fresh opened rose,
mm.
only never to be able, to start to breathe.
Mm.
And these things make you really wonder. These things make you really wonder sometimes then. You know, of how these things and the responsibility. Because, you know, if I messed up, if I were working in a factory and I messed mm-hmm. up a bolt of cloth, I would have to pay for that.
Right.
But if I give you the wrong medicine, I couldn't redo that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
If I give John Jones, Fred Jones medicine, I might take care of both, but in the way that I didn't want to take care of. No, it's an awful lot. It's an awful lot of responsibility. It's a lot of responsibility when a doctor prescribes a medication. In the meantime, when we had to do our own measuring and everything else, you know, when you order one thing, it's up to me then to figure out exactly what it is before I give it to you.
Mm.
So when we had that medicine, that's why that the Caduceus stands, that's why the Caduceus is the medical sign, because medicine is like a snake. It's harmless when it's used right.
Mm.
But it's deadly if it's misused.
Mm.
That's why the snake, you know, the rod with snakes.
I wondered about that, where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Medicine can and is deadly misused.
Mm.
And naturally the Caduceus says the snake on the rod, the motto is, don't tread on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't misuse me
mm-hmm.
in the place. And it's very interesting to me. I'm still just intrigued with this stuff that go on in medicine now.
You kind of follow that, you can.
Yeah. Or Oh, I was looking at a procedure just yesterday, and it still just, as the kids say, just blow my mind. You know, watching things that's done and how I would have loved to have been when they showed that surgeon that had lifted this baby, opened his mother, he found that the baby was in trouble. So the surgeon decided that he could do something about it. And he lifted this baby, opened the mother, lifted this baby up by its little shoulder, took the scalpel, went in between its ribs, still connected to the mother now, went in between its ribs, removed that tumor, sewed the baby up, put it back into the mother, sewed the mother up. She carried the baby, never has shown any trace, any shape, form, or fashion of any trace of the tumor returning. Wow. Now, if I could have been standing, if I could have been standing by or assisting him. I mean, when I say that this just, that I'm still so intrigued with procedures like that, these procedures that they come up with, that is just so unbelievable. It's just too unbelievable for words. You know, how time in itself changed so many things. And
I was going to ask, you must have seen a lot of changes between the time you started nursing and the...
Oh, a different world.
Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, what was...
Completely a different world. Well, for instance, when I went in nursing, we had to mix all of our own medications. For instance, our penicillin, everything, when he come to the floor, then we had to figure, you know, like if you wanted a certain strength to use the stir water, you know, to mix it in and what have you. We had to do our own needles and syringes, all of that stuff. Had the old glass thermometers that you shake down like this, and have your whole towel. The way that we would do it with as many as we had, we would take a small towel and wrap the thermometers in the towel, and when we got them out of the formaldehyde that we sterilized with, when we would take it out, then we'd put them in the towel, and then we'd give that towel a quick...
Kind of a little whip.
Yeah. But if you didn't have it folded right, crunch, crunch.
I bet.
Then it turned out where you were doing it at the procedure room then. Was more like a glass factory.
Mercury everywhere.
Right. We had all that. And then, you know, like with the IVs now, they have these machines set up. And you just, you know, you
punch
just.
In the numbers now.
Right. And it controlled. Then it was just the bag hanging up on the pole. And you start mine, and I'm like this. And you count it down, it's exactly the drops you want it to be. Only you decide to put your hand back of your head, and you go back to check to see how the thing is running. The bag is dry. Now, we want 1,000, we want 1,000 cc's to run over an 8-hour period. You got a time down. You got a time down. Exactly right. In that position. Only change in position. Change. And when you have 12 to 20 running at one time that you are responsible for along with everything else. Once in a while, it would happen. And that is the 8 hours amount of fluid 30 minutes later is gone. I was very, and I don't really, and I guess that this was one thing that that really keep you there. It's never a dull moment. It's nothing routine. Mm-hmm. Medicine is never working in the hospital, working with people is never a routine thing. There's from hour to hour, and you're just ready to walk out of the door then, and code blue emergency room. Forget it. Lay your pocketbook down and put your, drop your coat when you'll get home that day or night. Depends on how things go in the emergency room.
Right.
But it's, there again, as I said, it's, I don't know of a more interesting or challenging thing that you could be in than medicine.
What do you think were the most important medical changes while you were a nurse that affected what you, the patients that you were around during those years?
Well, it was a lot of things. It was a lot of things that changed for the better, I think. And still, there are things that has changed and is changing that I don't think is as well, that the patient is as well off now. The hospital or the doctor maybe, but the patient now. You can almost do drive-in surgery. And that is, as long as you can, if you recognize your name. And I saw another scary thing on there, and I know it happens, because it happened to me, is putting a patient, you don't put them too sound asleep now to do surgery, because they'll have to stay in the hospital longer. So you don't put them completely under, you just keep them in the twilight zone.
Mm-hmm. Right. Otherwise they're going to have to spend a couple nights in the hospital. Otherwise they're going to have to spend a couple nights in the hospital.
Right. If you don't put you too dead asleep, see, as soon as you recognize your name, then if they can get you in a chair and get you to the car, get you off the hospital grounds, what happens to you then is your responsibility and not theirs. I don't think, this thing of putting the anesthesiologist, putting 20 people to sleep at the same time, even at a different hospital, just using as instant that he'll come over to the VA and put me to sleep. Then he'll cross the street and go over to Duke and put you asleep.
Right.
Well, if I run into a problem and you run into a problem at the same time, what's going to happen?
You must stand out when you go to the VA. Don't you?
Well, just depends. I guess in some way. But generally speaking, you see, I don't tell them. I don't tell them that I have any medical background. I don't tell them that I have any medical background at all. The doctors stand right there and talk everything in detail. I mean, I don't have to ask them. Mm-hmm. And when they finish saying all they are going to say, then they say to me, "Miss Jones, do you have any questions?" Of course, I don't have any questions. And the part of it is, if they knew that I knew what they were talking about, they would never go into detail like they do. But I know the details of everything they're talking about. See?
Right.
Because they're speaking in medical. They're speaking in medical terms.
Right.
And.
Well, don't you also stand out just being a woman?
Yeah,
every time I'm at the VA, it's nothing but guys.
Mm-hmm.
And especially from the World War II generation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sure, come start in Vietnam, you start seeing some women maybe, but
right.
Even then, not a lot. But World War II, you see, that older crowd, it's just a bunch of guys sitting there smoking and...
Right, right.
Hanging out.
And it's just... it's. I would say in recent years that in going to the VA now, that because it would just be me, I would have a private room because there was nothing on the floor but me. And for years, as you said, until almost at Desert Storm.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's really the change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a scattering woman every now and then. But as I said, if they don't know, some already know it. But if they don't know it, I never tell them. And as I said, then when they ask me, you know, if there's any questions or anything, sometimes I'll ask about something maybe that they hadn't already discussed. I might ask mm-hmm. a question about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, then they a lot of times will say, now, what really are you asking? And I said, like the details, like what, how, what, why, when. Mm-hmm. You know, a 7-part question, mm-hmm. So to speak. Mm-hmm. And as I said to this physician, and I had 2 different opinions. And I just asked him then, I said, well, now, doctor, where did that leave me as a patient? Mm. He said, what do you mean? I said, like, do I go with Dr. Ears or do I go with Dr. Ain't? Mm. One said is and one said ain't. Mm. Now, who do I believe? Do I believe you that say it is? Or do I believe the other one that said it isn't? Because it can't be both. Mm. Of course, he just looked at me. But it did. As a person, and it's so different. All of the years, when I was looking down at what was being done to the procedure. Now, that was one thing, but when I was looking up, when I was the one there, and tell these asthma patients that are just struggling for everything in them, now just try to relax. Just try to relax. I know you can't breathe, you know, just to put it in everyday language. I know you can't breathe. Mm-hmm. But just kind of relax and you can breathe easier. Mm-hmm. Well, tie a string around your neck. Tie a string around your neck and relax. And then you can show me how to do it.
Now you see it for another time.
This is exactly what I was saying.
Yeah.
It's so different because... as when the time that they had discovered that I had cancer, just going in for a routine examination. Mm. They told everybody, well, I'll be home free, you see, once I have this. This was all left to be done was my mammogram, home free. Never with the slightest, not even the slightest, thought in my mind that it would only be the beginning of a long trek.
That started when?
That was back on 95. Mm-hmm.
Are you still being treated?
No. I'm not, though. I'm not on the treatment now, and I had had to come off. They had put me on the drug tamoxifen, but I had to come off that. But that was a shock. That was a shocker. And it was so ironic that we were walking, a neighbor up the road, and We were walking, and I said to her, because there was a young woman in the community that had had cancer, but she had gone into remission. And they said on a Sunday that the cancer had come back. Mm-hmm. And I said to this neighbor, I said, you know what? I have wondered how I would react if the doctor told me that I had cancer.
And that was just before?
That was on Thursday. That was on a Monday that I went in for my mammogram on Thursday of that same week. And they told me that I would, that I needed to set up a date to have a biopsy done. And I found out real quick how I would react. And the difference that it makes, for instance, something happened in a community, and you say to yourself, I'm as sorry as can be. And you are to the extent that you can be, because you can't really feel it, because it hasn't really hit home yet. Mm-hmm. It didn't involve you. As I told this individual, excuse me, about the a lot of the happenings, like stuff that would happen in the community. And I said, you can't even start to know, because it didn't affect you. Mm. It didn't touch you. And it makes all the difference in the world when it happens to us. Mm. We think that we know how someone else feels. But if we've never really been there, we can't know until we go there and under the same conditions that that individual went there under. You know, it's impossible for me to know. It's impossible for me to know. It was impossible for me to know what it was like when my friend lost her parents. Mm-hmm. It was impossible for me to know until I went there myself. Then I knew, because I just thought, you know, in seeing others and caring for others, that word, I'd say, well, you know, and don't be worrying about it now, because the biopsy might come back, just might come back negative. Don't cross the bridge till you get there.
Easy to say, I guess.
Very easy. And that applies in more ways than one. It's so easy. It's so easy for us to look at somebody else and figure out mm-hmm. Their problem. Mm-hmm. Only when we begin to deal with this situation ourselves, then we realize that it's easier said than done. Mm. It's very easy said. Just forget. No matter what that, what it concerned, we'll say, oh, just forget about it. Don't let it bother you. Because, you see, it's not bothering me what's wrong with you. Mm. It's not bothering you what's wrong with me.
Do you mind my asking, how did you react?
At first, I'd hear, I was floored, as I said, when I had the mammogram done, the radiologist told me, that we needed to do another shot of the, mammogram. And she brought the film in, and you don't like to have those mirror-like things up.
Right.
Or the light things that they look at the x-rays, and she put it up on the, my heart fell to my feet when I saw that film, because I just knew in my heart, then that it was cancer by the shape, more by the shape.
You could read it.
Enough to know
enough to know
that if it were if it were fibroid, generally speaking, it's more, I would call it in a shape.
Because most people wouldn't have known.
And this, the cancer being elongated. Mm-hmm. When I looked at it, I knew that in my heart. So she told me then that she was going to make an appointment with my surgeon. And we would need to talk and set up a date that we would need to do a biopsy. Mm-hmm. So she did. She called the surgeon, and when I got back up to the clinic, and he examined me and wanted to know when we could set up for a biopsy. And I asked him if he could do it then.
You wanted to just deal with it
right then? Right. I said, now, if we can do it now, by the time that I would be coming back 2 weeks from now to have the biopsy done, I will have already had the results. So he asked me, he said, "Miss Jones, would you consent to that?" I said, "Yeah, where's the paper?" So he gave me the paper to sign. I did, I signed the paper. I hadn't even redressed, even done the biopsy while I was still on the table that day. And he talked to me at length. He talked to me at length on what would need to be done if the biopsy came back positive. You know, so we had already talked in detail all of that before I came home that day. But it really hit me a lick. Mm. And I knew that day, I discovered that day the answer to my question of how I would react, you know, if this were to happen. Mm. But nobody still believe I don't know. I guess it was just, and I've had people to ask me how that I ever accepted it the way that I did. I said, for the mere reason, if I could have worried this away or denied it was there and it was going away, I would have just said, when the doctor told me, I would have just said, "Oh no, it can't be," and that would have been the end of it. But I said, I knew that I couldn't. That was something that I was going to, have to face, and I could not put my head in the sand and forget it. Mm-hmm. I had to deal with it, and in my own way. Your first reaction, as we were taught, and you learn on your own, your first reaction is denial. Mm-hmm. Your first reaction is denial. Then it's anger. Then it's pity. If you can ever get past that stage, then you kinda, I would say, on the downhill then. Once you admit to yourself, it's real. It's real. But there is no way to explain. There is no way to explain, I don't think, to a person what that word is until it's said to you. Mm. Because I had dealt with it over all these years in every shape, form, or fashion that you could ever think about.
Right.
Of the word. But
you did move past pity.
I couldn't wallow in self-pity. Because I had to ask the question instead of asking, why me? Why not? Hmm. Why not? I'm not any better. In fact, even to question that, because there's the little type that'll never know what it is to leave the carriage, to die that every day. Hmm. I had spent a long life when this happened with me. I didn't have any young children, as I said, dealing with cases of the kind. And you know, when here's this young woman with a knee baby and one in her arms, only to go in and discover that that she has terminal cancer. Mm-hmm. Not a cancer that can be treated, but one that's going to take her away mm-hmm. from her young husband and two babies.
Right.
And that didn't happen to me. So I just have to say, you know, why not? Mm-hmm. And if it could be that I, because now I did a lot of, well, I had to go back in January. I had my surgery the 15th of December of that year. That was in, naturally was in November when it was discovered. And I had my surgery in December. December 15th, as a matter of fact, I had surgery. And then my recoup time then was until on in January, mm-hmm. you know, till I could mm-hmm. Get set up for all the treatments. And I stayed at the VA for 6 weeks, wow. not having. Well, see, I had no positive transportation. Mm. You know, if I were to go every day, 5 days a week, to the VA and get the treatments, and somebody bring me home.
Right.
Right. That was not. And they told me that I would need to stay. I stayed at ECRC for the 6 weeks while I was having radiation.
That's the place in Greenville? What's ECRC?
Extended Care Rehabilitation Center.
Okay.
It's the VA.
Okay.
You know, like if you go to the VA, when you go in up at the main entrance, mm-hmm. that building to the right,
okay.
right across that right. section of lawn of going into the main building at the...
I know right where you are.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That's where I stayed.
Okay.
And for the 6 weeks and had my treatment. Then I came home on the 7th. Came home on the 7th of March. In January, I had to miss some of the times. I had to miss because of my blood count. I couldn't have my treatment. I didn't have to miss that many times, but I had to miss sometimes because of my blood count being down. Then I had been home not quite a week, and because I just had a. I just had a segmental mastectomy. And the remains of what was left then, about a week later, after I came home, abscess and burst. And back in the hospital, I went again for a stay. And then I had RNs to come from March till August and do my packing. They would have to come, well, at first they would come in twice a day and doing the packing. And then I got permission then to do the packing myself. But it was a long, long, drawn-out thing. But it could have been worse, though, because, as I said, getting to stay there, I didn't have to be worried, you know, of getting me a way to go and come every day. But, I've been asked the question, didn't I really know that something was going on? Even though it, you know, just something small, some sign, some shape, form, or fashion.
Right.
They didn't believe that I had no inkling, not even the slightest idea. Just walked in there for a routine exam, and that's what it ended up to be.
Are you okay now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so far. So far, so good, and every day.
did it change you, do you think, to go through that? I don't know. Did it change you to be on that side of, instead of, well, to have to your life threatened and to be...
Yes. Yes, I think I think it does. I think it does anybody. I think it does anybody. When the person is talking to you, when it's something that you absolutely, all my lifetime, I've dreaded the word cancer. I had seen so much, you know, in every way, and went through with it with my sister and a couple of my nieces and very close friends. You know, and saw the devastation of this. I just dreaded the thought, just the word, cancer, would ring a bell to me. But I still really didn't know the depth. I really didn't know the depth of it until he said it to me. I really heard the word. Well, for the reason when it happens to you, I hear it. When it happened to my sisters and to my niece, I heard. When it happened to me, I felt. And that's where the big difference comes. I didn't just hear this word. I felt it when he said, when he confirmed, you know, that it was, that I did have cancer and was going to have to undergo the treatments. Hopefully everything would be all right. And so far it is. Now how long it'll be, but all I can do is praise the bridge that took me over. Yeah, and it changes you in a lot of ways. It changes you in a... Well, I think it does. It changes you in a lot of ways, experiencing something like this. If it were gallbladder and you go in and have surgery, you're home free so far as the gallbladder. You may have something else before you get home.
Right.
But you won't ever, you know that you won't ever go through that again. With cancer, it's entirely a different thing. Because nobody will give you one ounce of assurance. We hope, is the way they tell you. At this time, they tell you. But nobody tells you. Now you won't have to. You've been operated for this cancer now, so you won't have to be thinking about that anymore. Mm-hmm. That's behind you. Nobody tells you that. Because they can't, they can't give you that assurance.
And you just learn to live with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when the time comes, when the time comes to go back for your checkup, just hoping that they don't ask you to come back for a different post. Because that in itself. We need to take from a different position of what have you. That in itself, and until you get that report. Oh, yeah, but it might not be that way, but I mean, with me, until I get that report that everything is all right. Mm-hmm. It's just like I told, Dr. Tyler, my surgeon. I said, the one thing about it, you won't have to set me up. If the report comes back negative, all you'll have to do on my part is to make sure that I have on enough clothes to be decent when I leave your office. Because if you say the word negative, that that's going to be all it takes down. I'm glad that you talked to me in the depth that you did. Because he did. He talked to me in detail. everything that would have to be done, you know, in case this turned out to be cancer, which is great. And as yet, it hasn't returned.
It made you think. I saw the, it made you think about your mortality. Because I saw a living will on your...
Oh, yeah.
Wall
yeah.
In there.
Yeah. Yeah. I signed that. I signed that the day I came home. Mm-hmm. March the 7th. And I posted it. I posted it because I don't want to go through what, be put through what I've seen a lot of people put through. Now, if I were to have a heart attack in what I call general